Hey guys, the following podcast is a Lady Gang Network and Podcast One production, which means it's going to be awesome.
Welcome to The Stacks, a podcast about books and the people who read them. I'm your host, Tracy Thomas, and today our guest is Jack Vanek of The Lady Gang and The First Degree podcast. She's back today to talk with us about Billy Jensen's true crime book, Chase Darkness, with me. There are a few minor spoilers on today's episode, though I don't think it will take anything away from your reading of the book. Remember, you can find everything we talk about on today's episode by clicking the link in the show notes. Also in the show notes are links to the social media accounts of The Stacks and our guests. If you'd like to have myself and my guests suggest a book for you on air, email us at askingthestacks@gmail.com. You send us your name, what you're looking for in a book, and then we'll discuss it on air and give you something we think you should read. It's super easy. You just email askingthestacks@gmail.com. If you like this show and want to support the work we're doing, here are a few easy ways you can help. Join us on Patreon. You earn perks like our virtual book club, and your contribution helps to keep The Stacks up and running. It's a great way to connect with other listeners, and personally, it means a whole lot to me. So head over to patreon.com/thestacks. Another way to support the show is to support our sponsors like Audible. The folks over at Audible are giving anyone who has never tried their service a 30-day trial and a free audiobook download just for checking them out. So head to audibletrial.com/thestacks and redeem. Lastly, and perhaps most easily and certainly the most free, you can subscribe to The Stacks and you can leave us a rating and a review. It's so easy. It almost seems like it wouldn't matter, but it does. It really, really does. All right, now that all that business is out of the way, let's get to our conversation with Jack Vanek. All right, you guys, I'm back with Jack Vanek of The Lady Gang and The First Degree podcast, and Jack Vanek of Jack Vanek. How do you say
all the
that?
Things.
How do you say, I'm Jack Vanek of Jack Vanek?
It's funny because I do talk about my brand, like, obviously in third person sometimes, right. And I'm always like, oh, that looks like a Jack Vanek t-shirt. And I'm like, that's so weird,
that's weird.
That it's me and people probably think that I'm insane.
It's got to be like Jack by Jack Vanek or Jack Vanek by Jack.
Yeah. Jack by Jack by Jack. It's like that Mark
by
Jacobs.
Mark. Yeah, exactly.
Have you seen that meme where it's like Mark by Mark Jacobs by MJ Mark Jacobs by I'm like, that's how I feel.
That's you. Yeah. You invented that. Yep. Anyway, so today we're talking about Chase Darkness With Me by Billy Jensen. I should read the subtitle. Let's see. It's Chase Darkness With Me, and it's How One True Crime Writer Started Solving Murders. It's by Billy Jensen. If you're not familiar with Billy Jensen, he is a true crime writer who is most famous for being one of the people who finished Michelle McNamara's book,
I'll Be Gone in the Dark.
I'll Be Gone in the Dark.
Like, I almost forgot it.
I was going to be like, Chase Darkness With Me? No, I'll Be Gone in the Dark. After she passed away, they were friends. So that's kind of his claim to fame, but Now he's turned that in. He was doing things before, but now he's really like
a catapulted him into stardom.
Yeah,
in the true
crime stardom.
World.
Exactly. Okay, we always start in the same place. What did you think of the book?
I loved it. I mean, I obviously have a really close relationship with Billy. So For me, it was super interesting because there are so many of these stories that I didn't even know that he was a part of. It's so funny because we'll be talking like in our podcast or whatever, and he's like, yeah, you know, when I solved that murder, and we're like, what murders have you really solved, Billy? Like, you've never talked about any of them,
right?
So it was interesting to kind of read through and actually see his place in all of these in these cases. And then also, like, he's always talked about his dad and like speaks so highly of his dad. So for me, it was very touching to kind of see how he like wove his dad throughout the entire story.
Was that stuff new to you? Like the personal stories, or had you heard a lot of that already?
So there was one story in here when he was talking about how he learned about death, and he was talking about how his dad, was talking about his, kid in his class that got hit by a bus.
Right.
And he was like, you know, he was there one day and then he was gone the next. And he was talking about how he wasn't, you know, religious. So there wasn't like, he wasn't, you know, he's in heaven now and in a better place. He's just like, yeah, he's gone. He's kind of told that story before. It was actually in the episode that we did, about my boyfriend and the kid that got murdered by his mom in his class, because it was the same kind of thing. You know, you learn about death for the first time. And so I had heard that story before, but there was a lot of things, you know, when he would like talk about his dad that I didn't know. And it was such a, he's such an interesting person because there's so, he deals with like so much darkness, and then there's like, there's so much light to him as well.
Right. I had mixed feelings on this book. So I kind of felt like it was two books in one.
Yeah.
Which was hard for me because I didn't feel like it was, I felt like the marketing of the book didn't match what was in the book.
Right.
I thought it was going to be a lot about true crime, like 90% true crime. I thought we were maybe going to get like a little bit about Billy. And so I opened it up with that anticipation.
Right.
And so I kind of felt let down in that sense.
Got
it. So it was hard for me to shift, which is not necessarily a critique of the book.
Right.
So much that it's just like, it didn't match what I was thinking. And sometimes it's hard to get it right.
It's like expectation versus reality.
Yeah. So like, I think I struggled with that a lot in the book. And I also thought that like, I thought that it was a little redundant. Like he kept bringing up the same things that I was like, wait, didn't we do this already?
Well, that's what I was, because there was the Bear Brook thing, the barrels and the bodies.
Yes.
That part that was brought up later in the book. Well, it was because they found new information out. But I totally get where that's coming from.
Yeah.
And then sometimes, you know, I feel like it jumped around a little bit.
That's, I think, what it was. Like, it was hard to know, am I in the memoir part or am I in the crime part?
Right.
But I liked it. Like, I didn't dislike the book. I just don't think I ever quite clicked into it.
I totally get what you're saying.
You know what I mean? I don't know.
So I think that that's, it's probably hard when it's like you're trying to tell your life story while also trying to tell the stories of these cases that were going on that are also sort
like
of
so separate from you.
Totally separate from you.
Like, it's not like, I feel like a lot of times in memoir when it's tied into other things, the thing is really connected to you.
But he's like inserting himself into other things.
It's like, it's like first degree. It's actually like second degree. Like,
totally.
He's doing your podcast as a book, kind of. It's like, this is how this person's thing connects to this murder that connects to me or whatever.
Right.
So that was like kind of tricky for me. So I never really like settled into the book. I always kind of felt like a little bit removed from it, which was a weird experience because that's not, usually I'm like, I like this book or I didn't like this book. And I was somewhere kind of like, what am I feel like?
You're like, I don't know how I feel.
Yeah, totally. We didn't talk about this last week, but I am really curious. How did you get into true crime? Like, what was the murder, like the story that made you be like, I'll continue down this path?
So I forget what he has like a name for it. It was in the end of the book. Like, what is like the thing that gets you into it? What the hell is it? Did he say what it was?
I just want you guys to know Jack has like flags all over her book and has highlighted and like written all over it. And
well,
it's kind of amazing.
The reason why is because I listened to it on an audiobook and I'm like, if I ever want to reference anything, how am I going to know?
Right.
Origin story. That's what he called it. And so my origin story, I guess, and what got me into true crime in general was my first degree that I had a connection to. And it was a girl on my cheerleading team in high school when I was 16 years old. Her mother ended up killing her her husband. She had her current boyfriend kill her husband and got away with it for like 15 years. And during those 15 years was when I was on the cheerleading team in high school, and I used to have sleepovers at this woman's house. So I was like sleeping at a murderer's house, basically. So that was my connection to it. And it was funny because our other podcast partner, Alexis, she's a true crime TV producer, and she was doing an episode of Snapped, you know, the TV show.
No.
On this. So it's a TV show about women who kill.
Oh, amazing.
And it's like basically, you know, when they snap and
they
kill.
Snap.
And she was doing an episode on, her name is Nanette Johnson. She's in jail for the rest of her life now, but she was doing an episode on her, and I was like, oh my God, like I went to high school with her daughter. I was sleeping at her house. Like, it's so crazy.
Oh,
so that was my connection to it. I've always kind of liked true crime before it was a genre. Like, I loved Unsolved Mysteries growing up, and Dateline and all that. In 2020, I'd always watch on Friday nights. So, but then, I mean, Serial was like the first thing that I listened to, kind of like in this day and age that kind of got me into
it. Serial was kind of the resurgence of popular true crime. There's a book called Popular Crime by Bill James, who is, again, in my weird wheelhouse, is a sports writer.
Really?
But he also is like obsessed with true crime. And he wrote this great book about like how true crime has always been a thing, and like crime's always been popular. And you go back and there's all these like murder stories and like famous murder trials from the 1800s.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Like, you know, Jack the Ripper and all this stuff. It was a really good book. But Serial kind of made true crime really hot again.
Yeah, really did. And it's so weird. Cause yeah, that was the first of everything.
Because I used to feel weird about liking true crime and like think that I was a weirdo. And then Serial happened and everyone's like, oh, I love true crime. I'm like, but it's... where were you at JonBenet? Yeah. Like, where were you when I was worried about Polly Klass? And like,
right.
Like, because I don't remember feeling like I could just go talk to all my friends about how I was obsessed with like Columbine. You
right.
Know?
No, it brought it back into mainstream, I feel like. Where, yeah, before it was like... Yeah, if you're like, oh, you know, yeah, JonBenet, blah, blah, people would look at you like you're a freaking weirdo. But now it's so normalized.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I have mixed feelings about that in general, and I'm a part of it. But it's like you have to, I mean, it's, you know, it's like looking at like a car wreck. There's that sort of part of it that makes you kind of feel dirty for liking it. But at the same time, it's, as a woman, I feel like we're kind of, you know, bringing... like rationality to chaos in a sense in our minds when we want an ending and we want justice and we want to catch the killer. And
right.
All
he says that in the book. He says that people like true crime because it restores order to chaos.
Yeah.
It's like you have this horrible thing and then.
And you want to see it solved. And as a woman, it's like you want to see the bad guy put behind bars so they're not out there, you know, going to get somebody else.
Right.
But it is true crime such an interesting thing. But I mean, I love Billy because he's always kind of come across or come, you know, to trying to solve these murders out of such a place of empathy and like just seeking justice. While I feel like a lot of people do, I mean, there's a lot of podcasts out here that are like comedy true crime,
right?
And where it's almost like making light of something that's literally a traumatizing.
It's like the worst day in a lot of people's lives, and, or like the worst week or month.
Absolutely,
or
and you know, people have lost loved ones, and people are cracking jokes about it. But that's something that he has always carried with him of like respect for victims, and you know, treating everybody with that because it's horrible.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the things that I really liked about this book that really comes across is his appreciation and respect for victims and the families, and like by naming the victims and like getting you know, even from that first story of the man in the green hoodie, he names that victim. He talks about, like, he allows those family members to talk about their positive memories of him in life.
Yeah,
and I think that that's really important because unless the victim's family has a platform, you never really hear about it.
No.
Like, you never, like, I mean, one that pops into my mind is, like, O.J. Simpson.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, the Goldman family, they're really, like, advocates for Ron Goldman. And so we're all familiar with the dad and the sister. And, like, we're all familiar with their pain and their grief. But on the other side, like, when you look at Nicole Brown's family, like, they really are... I mean, they're there because it's a celebrity story and we all know them, but it's not in the same way.
Yeah.
Like when you think of Ron Goldman's dad, it's like you can picture him, you can see him crying, like
oh my God,
you can connect with that pain in a way that most true crime stories, it's like...
They don't have. Well, so we had Kim Goldman
I
on our podcast.
That, yeah.
I mean, it was insane. And I don't, have you listened to her podcast at all?
No, I didn't know she had one.
So she has it's Confronting OJ. That's what it's called. But I mean, she has her dad on and I physically cannot listen to her dad talk because it is the most excruciating pain ever.
It is. I mean, it's really, that's a really tough, like all the OJ things, whenever they come on, it's like, this is tough. This is tough.
It's really tough. And I mean, she, but the reason why it's like you hear all that, because they've been fighting.
Yeah. That's
where
yeah.
I feel like Nicole Brown's family kind of has more stayed behind,
right?
You know, the spotlight and stuff for, you know, whatever reason.
Well, and also justified. Her kids are OJ's kids.
Like
it's a little murkier.
Right.
As far as like, how do you handle this situation?
Yeah. But like if Ron's family didn't say anything, I mean, he was like the forgotten victim, right?
Right.
So it's like if they weren't fighting every day, he would really be forgotten.
Right.
So.
Right.
But yeah, I think that, you know, Billy has always kind of been a victim's advocate in that realm and is always like naming the victims and telling their stories because, you know, as humans, it's like we're drawn to like the fucked upness of things.
Right.
And it's like you're drawn to the perpetrator, you're drawn to the murderer, and then they're almost like glorified in a weird way. And it's so ass backwards and it doesn't do anything to help it. And it's, you know, then it makes these other bad guys, you know, worship them even more because they're infamous. And so it's.
And we don't know how to deal with death and sadness.
No.
So it's like we don't want anything to do with the victim.
Because it's sad.
Yeah.
Like that's
like if you start dealing with it, it's like, oof, this is hard.
That's where it like really, it makes you uncomfortable. And I feel like I mean, I'm guilty of it too. It's like you get interested in the perpetrator and like how, why does their mind work the way that it works? And those are the things that are exciting. Mm-hmm. And then when you think of the victim, like those are the things that are sad. And, yeah. You know, we try to kind of block that stuff out, I feel right. like, as humans.
Yeah, me too. Totally. It's like you want to enjoy the story and like you want it to be entertainment, but it's not because it's real.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody could write it.
No.
As good as the real story. Like, so as it's like,
fact, yeah.
like, this is the best murder story, but I have to kind of ignore the fact that someone was murdered in order to enjoy this.
Right. Because
otherwise I'm like excited about murder, which is a tricky thing when you start to like think about it.
That's why I'm saying like true crime is so interesting as a yeah. genre, because it's like you're excited about this really could not be anything more messed up than that.
Yeah.
You know? So there's like, it's an interesting psychology, I feel like, behind
right.
all that. But yeah, I mean, it's, you have to like remember the victims or else it's just sick.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's like you've glorified this terrible thing and you're not even recognizing like why it's terrible and who had like at what cost.
Right.
Yeah. Now I don't even want to like true crime anymore. I wish I was just like one of those people who's like, I'm not into true crime.
Now. I know. I'm like, I can't stop.
I love true crime stories, but then I also have really bad nightmares.
Oh, you do?
Oh, yeah. I'm like not actually into true crime. Like, I like it, but I like don't like it.
See, okay. I'm going to tell you the weird, I have a weird thing with that. Like true crime, I feel like it's, I have it at like arm's length. So I don't get nightmares or anything about true crime. Things that really freak me out are the mass shootings. Yeah. Freak me out.
That's freaking out. But I consider that true crime.
I don't. See, that for me, we did, Gabrielle Giffords, you know,
yeah.
So we did an episode about her and that was such a hard episode. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's like it feels too close.
Yeah.
Whereas like the thing with true crime is, you know, the possibility of somebody that, you know, being murdered and that like in the true crime ish way
right.
that people talk about is pretty slim. So
right.
it is sort of at like arm's length. Whereas I don't know, that feels so close.
Like it could happen at any time.
Yeah,
to you.
Yeah. It's a weird thing.
Huh. Well, I think maybe my true crime, I'm more into true crime that's like bigger events that are more connected to other things.
Right.
If I had a choice between a book about a murder of a person versus like a cult type situation, I'm always going to go cult.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like I'm much more interested in like
the bigger picture of something.
Yeah, like the psychology of people
right.
than I am about
like depraved human.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So like a serial killer is more interesting to me than like a one-off weird murder.
Right. Well, but and I'm going to go back to his book because I think that's interesting because the cases that he was, you know, helping solve are all those cases that are like almost the forgotten
yeah.
cases where it's, you know, it's either people that are on drugs or
right.
it's like a street crime or
right.
a hit and run or whatever, where that's not an interesting story to somebody
right.
like you or I. Like
right.
I'm not going to listen to a podcast about, you know, like the guy that got punched and then ended up getting ran over by a car. Like
right.
that's not interesting.
Well, that one was weird to me slightly because I kind of felt like who is to blame here.
Right.
And like, I mean, he doesn't have the answers, but I was thinking like, did the people who robbed, what was his name? Marcus or something?
Yeah. Marcus Gaines, I think. Yeah.
Did the people who rob him know that the guy was going to punch him out so that they could rob him? Or was it like another opportunistic crime that like popped up?
Right.
And then the person who ran over with the car, like that was just an accident. Like the whole thing, I was like, wait, so the guy in the green hoodie were arresting him for punching someone. Like,
yeah.
He's not really to blame for
right.
the murder.
I can't remember. What did he end up getting arrested for?
I want to say it was like assault.
Okay.
I don't know. But maybe it was manslaughter, but it couldn't have been murder.
Yeah. Because
it wasn't like, I mean, he knocked the guy out. Like, don't hit people.
Right.
But it was a weird place to start
yeah.
for me. I was like, wait, is this even a true crime story? Like, someone did die, which
right.
is sad. But like,
but it was a multiple. It was just a set of circumstances that were really, I mean, horribly timed.
Yeah. Bad timing.
Right.
But it was a weird. It was that. It's like a weird crime where I was like, I think that's also part of what was I maybe wasn't is into in the book is that I thought it would be more about crimes that I knew about.
Right.
Because I like when I already know about a crime and then it's like a deeper dive into it.
Yeah.
Or when I can spend like a lot of time with something that I don't know, which is why I think Serial worked.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like a lot of time with something that I had knew nothing about.
You're deep diving.
Deep.
Yeah.
Deep.
Well, that's what, have you ever like looked into the Bear Brook murders?
Those are
the Barrel ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I'd never looked into that.
So that's something, and well, that's what I kind of wish. I totally agree with you because that case in particular is so crazy,
right?
And so many twists and turns, and like it's one of the like wildest cases ever.
Yeah,
but I mean, he touches on it, you know, in the two chapters.
I think it's like maybe even more because he mentions it in the beginning, and then he kind of like gets to the girl,
Lisa, yes, the little girl,
Yeah, and then he comes back to it like way later,
right?
So, yeah.
So it's like little, but that's, I want to dive into that
yes,
case.
I just want that book.
Yeah.
Like the Barrel Murder book. Wait, what did you call it? The Bear?
Bear Brook. I think that was it was either the name of the city or the name of the yard that they found the barrels in. But then also the only reason I knew that they were really connected is because I was familiar with that case, but I don't know if I would have.
I didn't know they were connected.
Put those dots together if I didn't. But I know that's what's interesting because it's like he's telling stories from like how he was connected to that. He's like first degreeing himself in there.
Right. Yeah.
But like you said, it's like inserting himself into there in a way. But yeah, it's like, but tell, you know, you should tell, you know, the Scott Peterson story then.
Right. That's like, that was near where I grew up. So I was like,
it was.
Yeah. My friend.
Well, do you think he's guilty or innocent?
For sure. I always think they do it.
Yeah.
I'm the worst. I'm like, yeah, you did it. I totally buy in.
I do too.
But then like for example, though, for like OJ, I think OJ did it, but I don't think OJ deserved to be convicted.
Right.
Like, I think that like in watching did you watch the 8-part or the 5-part documentary that like won the Oscar?
Yeah.
The Ezra something. I can't remember his last name. Anyways, the documentary. When I finished that, I was like, I have never been more convinced that OJ did it, and I have never been more convinced that he deserved to be acquitted. And that was like a crazy thing for me, because I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Because those are two different things. I think that's also what's really interesting to me, and it actually comes up in the book. I had a moment where he's talking about like, oh, I solved this murder because there was an arrest. I solved this murder. And I kept thinking, I don't know if that's a solve. Just because someone's arrested for something does not mean that they committed the crime.
No.
Or that like, yeah. So like, I thought that was really interesting because he wasn't judging his solves by convictions. He was judging his solves by
captures. Yeah.
But like, I mean, we know full and well people are arrested all the time for things they didn't do.
Exactly. Yeah.
And like, not to say that his investigating was bad or anything, but like, you know, some of it, a lot of it's like circumstantial, you know, it's like, oh, this person had a green hoodie on around the same time. And I saw that picture on Facebook.
Right.
You know, and it's like, okay, I get it. Sure.
Right.
But like, that's a hoodie from Target. Like a lot of people might have that.
Right.
And like people who have a widow's peak, you know, like, so for me, I was kind of like, I appreciate what you're doing, but I also wonder what's the line there for like citizen crime solvers and people's actual lives and liberty and getting incarcerated or arrested for something that they maybe didn't do.
Well, that was, he mentioned that like at the end of the, well, I think he mentioned it a couple times because it was like the worst thing that's ever happened with the crowdsourcing for solving crimes was the Boston bombing.
Right.
And when all those people, do you remember that happening?
I was in California staying up late at night on my phone.
On Reddit.
Like, watching the police scanners on Twitter and everything. I was so into it.
I just, when it was happening, I'm like, this is freaking amazing that we're able to do this, you know, and it's, you know, a detective's office or whatever is not going to be able to go through every single security camera that was even in Boston at the time and try to pin, like, there were thousands and thousands of people. So I'm like, it's such a cool thing that people are gathering together and doing.
Right.
And then they got the wrong guy.
Right.
So it's like, that was such a bummer. And it was probably the biggest, you know, example of people, you know, crowdsourcing together to try to solve something. But there are so, it's a tricky thing, I think, for people to try to get into, and you know, you could ruin people's lives in the process,
like super easy,
really easy. And he had that like this like rules to do it in the end, and they're smart because it's like, don't dox people, don't right. be giving out information, don't be calling people out like in public, because
right. don't tag people
like don't be trying to like go and physically like confront somebody right. like because they could kill you
right.
So it's just it's an interesting and very I feel like almost shaky kind of thing yeah. to try to get into.
I think so too. I like what is great about it is that someone is devoting their attention to something that like law enforcement can't.
Right.
And you know, I have a lot of thoughts about law enforcement. Like there's a lot of good and bad and you know, whatever, all of that aside, I understand that they're underfunded and understaffed.
Right.
And like, you know, there's a book called Ghetto Side, which I actually don't recommend. I don't like the book, but it's about the LAPD detectives, maybe Compton, maybe Watts somewhere. And they're solving like, you know, gang murders and those types of crimes. And one of the things that is great about the book, or that really comes off, is like how little resources they have and how many crimes these like three detectives are trying to solve, and how like when you get a promotion, they want to leave that area. So nobody wants to be there, and
right.
like, all that kind of stuff, which is kind of ties into the crimes that Billy's talking about that he's solving that like nobody really cares about, like
yeah.
meth heads or drug addicts or, you know, gang bangers or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like, the people, the black and brown people, the transgender people, like yeah. all the people that aren't pretty white girls
yeah.
who get murdered by their handsome husbands or whatever.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that people are interested in those crimes.
Right.
But then I'm like, yeah, but that's also the first person that's going to get arrested for something they didn't do and not have the resources to get out of it and plead and end up in jail for 30 years.
That's so like, true.
You know, like, so it's like, I get it, but I also feel like that's super dangerous because a lot of people don't have the resources that Scott Peterson had.
Yeah.
You know, to like launch a whole campaign about
to do a whole new documentary about right. why you didn't do it.
Right. Like to become, and like a lot of people don't have the Scott Peterson face, right?
Or charm.
Yeah, exactly.
Or, yeah.
So it's like, I appreciate the idea of it. Like he says in the book, 38% chance that no one catches a murderer. Like there's a 38% chance that a murderer isn't caught for their crime.
Yeah, and
that there's 5,000 new unsolved murders every year.
And well, it's like, yeah, it's something like 15 a day happen. And it's,
yeah.
and that's what makes it hard for law enforcement. Cause it's like, you know, a new day, here come
15 new crimes.
And it's like, if you don't get any leads in the first 48 hours, like you're exponentially,
right.
you know, going down on being able to solve something. So I am mind blown that any of these murders get solved at all. Because I'm like, how, like, of course you're understaffed and underfunded. And the fact that you can solve anything is mind blowing
right.
to me. So
right. totally.
That's, I mean, it's frustrating. And I'm sure a lot of these families are just sitting there being like, feeling so helpless because
yeah.
nobody is, you know, helping them because, you know, for whatever reasons that you said earlier. And, you know, any life is just as important as another one. So
yeah.
it's a bummer. So,
and he talks about how much money, like in Facebook ads and all those things.
It's crazy.
Like, that's a lot of money.
Well, and here's the crazy thing that he didn't mention in the book. Like he's tried to reach out to Facebook or like Instagram and, you know, those kind of sites to be like, hey, you know, I'm working on this thing. Like it'd be great if I could get some like, credit or like
right.
if it could, could have like a free promotion or something. And like nobody will do it, which
wow.
is crazy because, you know, for things like that, for especially for missing persons, right?
Right.
Like even if you're not trying to, you know, it's not the perpetrator that, you know, could be wrongfully identified or something
right.
like
right.
that is where it kind of gets sticky
murky, yeah.
and murky. But if it's a missing person and you can, you know, get a lot of money to put it out there because, you know, you're way more people are going to see it on Facebook than on a fucking milk carton or something
right.
like that. Like that's where it would be cool if, you know,
right.
places like Facebook could supply some resources.
But they probably make a shit ton of money off those.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you think? Like, I would be so curious to know what percentage of their, like, ads are for missing people.
Probably a good
a
amount.
Lot. Yeah.
Because those are because those people are probably crowdfunding their own money to be able
to do it. Yeah.
yeah. Which is
so sad.
Sneaky.
And it's really sad, too, to think, like, such a giant corporation
is just so damn greedy that
yeah.
they're taking your money to try to find your missing loved one.
Yeah. Fuck. like, wait a minute.
This went dark.
We really sad all of a sudden. I got to get off Facebook. Don't follow us on Instagram. We're not there anymore.
I don't exist.
We're off all social media. We just, I mean, do you know if Billy crowdsources his funds for Facebook ads and things?
I don't know if he
does. Like, does he have a Patreon or something?
Not that I know. No. He can't, because I would have known about it.
You would have heard about it.
I'm pretty sure he was putting all of his like personal money into it, which is wonderful.
So generous.
So generous.
And I bet that's not a tax write-off.
Yeah, probably not.
I mean, you're paying Facebook ads. It's not like you're sending it to charity.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't write. Yeah. Oh, that sucks.
He was saying how like Facebook isn't really what it used to be. And I was thinking of that too. I was like, I can't get any traction on Facebook. I'm like, I got married. It's like 3 likes. I'm like, all right, Facebook, fuck you.
No, the thing that, cause I mean, I used to do Facebook ads for my brand and stuff, and it's changed so much, especially recently, that you won't get any sort of a response unless you put a shit ton of money in. Like, you can't be like, oh, I guess I'll just put $50 in and see how, you know. And he was doing stuff, you know, in like geo kind of targeting. They're not going to push it to anybody unless you're putting like thousands of dollars in, which is, it's just, Facebook is corrupt.
Yeah.
They're making it impossible to do anything.
We need a congressional hearing on this.
Yeah.
Mark Zuckerberg's stupid little face. I'm like, now that I'm thinking about it, like sometimes when I read a book, I just take in the whole story. And then when we sit down and talk about it on the podcast, I start thinking about like more little things that kind of bothered me in the moment, but I didn't really think about it. And then I get like so off track in my mind. I like keep looking down at my notes being like, and then I'm like, I still have more to say about how mad I am
about Mark Zuckerberg.
Facebook. Wait, I do want to talk about this though. So one of the other things that's kind of like a big theme or like a big point that he comes back to a lot is this whole DNA testing thing.
Right.
And I feel similarly about the DNA testing pools on these private websites that I do about the crowdsourcing of crime solving.
So you're against it?
I'm not necessarily against it, but it makes me very worried.
Yeah. And like, that's a murky thing too.
Super murky. If you don't know what we're talking about, basically he talks a lot about the way that they found the Golden State Killer was by taking some of the DNA that they had and matching it to distant, like third and fourth
cousins.
Yeah. Their DNA through closed databases of DNA. So like if you were to do 23andMe, it wouldn't be that. It would be, you have to option yourself into these other databases for crime purposes, for connecting purposes.
Yes, it's called GEDmatch, I think.
Yeah.
And I think that, see, which is weird because I hadn't even heard of that before.
Like I did an episode on The Daily about this.
They did?
And so that's how I heard more about it.
But was it like how it was like taking your personal...
Well, it was about the Golden State Killer.
Oh,
so they were just talking more about how they found the Golden State Killer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like if you do 23andMe, that does not mean that you're in that database.
Right.
Like you have to opt into it, and then that's... That database is more like, I guess, kind of sort of like the ancestry thing where
trying to connect you to people who also have your same DNA. But they have a clause, I guess, that says that it can be used, like you can enter in DNA.
Used by third parties or something?
I guess. I'm not exactly sure how it works. But that's how they were able to figure out who the Golden State Killer was, because then they found this third cousin and they were able to trace back, be like, oh, it could be any of these 7 people because... They have matching DNA. They were alive at this time.
They were traveling to those locations.
Yeah, they were living there, whatever. So it is super murky because if you open up these other databases like 23andMe, it's like, I didn't really opt into all of this.
And and you have like the building blocks of my person, basically.
Right.
Who knows what you're going to do with those in the future?
And if it's public, that means like the government can be in there and seeing like... You know, and like health insurance companies, and it's like you start opening it up for things like that feel really altruistic, and you're like, wait a second.
Yeah.
We just talked about how shitty Facebook is. Do you think that
that's how everything
health insurance is going to be any better?
I mean, anything with technology, it's like it starts like, well, anything in life, really, it's like something that starts as like an altruistic thing ends up, you know, it's just the greed within it ends up, you know, turning it to shit.
Right. And if you if your job was to be like making pharmaceutical whatever, and you had a database of all these people who were potentially had a gene or whatever that could link to a Alzheimer's, that could link to a cure, whatever. of course you're going to use that as an opportunity to make your drug to make billions of dollars.
That's all that we need is to give like the pharmaceutical industry more ammo.
Right. Exactly. More DNA.
Yeah. Great.
More. So like I'm really torn about it because I understand like for this really small unsolved mystery DNA type thing, like I'm like, sure, I get it. But then you're opening the floodgates to so many other things.
But then it's like that's not even the like the – where does that go? Is it like the government has it then? Or it's like the police? Like,
well, the police, obviously, if they can arrest you based off
so it's, but it's more so this GEDmatch thing is the people to blame. Because they're the ones that can give it to all the other third parties.
But no, because Billy in the book, I think, is talking about how he wishes that these other because GEDmatch is like, has like a quarter of the DNA,
right?
Whereas 23andMe has 100%,
right?
So you have to take your DNA and put it
and
there.
Put it there, yeah.
So he's saying he wished that or maybe not just him, but like the argument, from my understanding, is that they wish that all the places would open themselves up,
right,
for crime solving purposes,
right?
And I think that's super dangerous.
I feel like you should have to opt into that.
Opt in, because I wouldn't.
Well, and probably nobody that is putting their stuff into that GEDmatch even understands what they're signing off for.
Right.
I wouldn't, unless this was explained to me, like in this, in like layman's terms, like that.
Right.
But like, I would have been like, I don't. Yeah, connect me to my distant relatives. That sounds good. And then in fine print, it's like, by the way, any third party.
Right. By the way, if anybody in your family ever committed a crime, now we can find them and we can pin them down.
I know.
But also, like, the other thing that's weird about it is that, from my understanding, I think this came from the Daily episode, they talk about that it's, like, overwhelmingly Anglo-Saxon people, like white people.
Yeah.
Overwhelmingly, who are able to afford and do these things, but who also are interested because, like, there's lots of history of especially black people like being scared of the government getting their DNA, and so they don't
do
that.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, my brother got it for us for Christmas, and the whole family was like, what are you doing?
Like, did nobody do
we
it?
We did it. We all did it.
Oh, okay.
We're half white, half black.
Right.
So the white side of the family, we did it. But I went on because there's like a way if you go on 23andMe, it can say like, oh, if you opt in, we can help you connect to all your relatives or whatever. And mine.
Wait, so does that if you say that, does that mean that now it's in the GEDmatch?
No, it's not. Still not in the GEDmatch. I think that's like a separate website. I'm not exactly
sure. That's what I thought.
But they do have a thing on 23andMe where it's like a map and you can be like, oh, you have people like a sixth cousin in this place or whatever. And for us, it was all of our like Jewish white side. There was no match for anybody on my black side anywhere, period.
Oh, that's interesting.
It was all from my white side. And I was like, well, this makes sense. But that's just also like another interesting fact about these DNA tests.
Yeah.
Have you done one?
I did one. I did 23andMe. Yeah. 23andMe was one of our sponsors. So we all did it. Yeah.
I did it. Did you find out anything good?
I know. I mean, I'm 51% Greek, so I'm a little bit more of my mom than my dad.
Okay.
Greek genes strong. Other than that, it's like everything was as expected. What about you?
No, we were surprised that my mom was so Ashkenazi Jew.
Oh, really?
She was like 99%.
Holy shit.
We kind of thought like everyone's a little mixed.
Yeah.
So like my brother and I are both like 50% like Jewish, like Ashkenazi Jew is how they put it in there. But it was really a shock to us because we were like, nobody in your family ever mixed with anybody else for like
ever.
It was like 99% Ashkenazi Jew and like 0.3% like Native American.
Weird.
We were like, what the fuck? But no, we were basically exactly what we thought we were.
Right.
Yeah. Because on our black side, there's like some mixing, but my dad's was from Louisiana, so that's like Creole. So we knew there was going to be some French or like Western European in there. Like, so it was all exactly what we thought. But I've heard fucking crazy stories about people finding out like their dad wasn't their dad.
Yeah.
And like their mom had an affair or they were adopted or like, I'm like, yo.
Dude, 23andMe is like ripping families apart.
Ruining people's lives.
I remember
Becca was telling me a story about like someone...
A present for Christmas? It was like a
23andMe,
and the dad was like, "Don't do it, don't do it."
No, it was like siblings, and then it came out that they had 50% different DNA. And it turned out the mom had had an affair. Dad and the mom had broken up and had an affair. And then the mom got back together with the dad. So the dad raised both kids as his own. Right. But the second kid wasn't actually the dad's kid.
Oh, God.
I'm like,
and they found it all out through 23andMe.
Yeah, like, Merry fucking Christmas. Are you kidding me? Oh, next year at Christmas, it's like, we're not doing presents this year. We're all going to donate to Billy Jensen's Patreon to help solve crimes because, like, we truly cannot.
Like, keep those skeletons in the closet.
Like, my God, I'm going to choke to death.
Not today.
Hopefully not. Well, you'll solve my crime. You'll be like, she was in a room alone with Jack Vanek and then she just died. But it's fine. And then they're going to crowdsource you and say you killed me.
I know.
Circumstantial evidence. I'm just saying. Billy Jensen.
Who else could have done it?
Okay. The other thing I want to talk about, because I'm curious how you guys handle this on your podcast.
Okay.
White female victims. They're always the star.
Always the star.
At least of the big ones.
So a big part of our podcast is we're trying to tell stories that usually don't get told. Like, okay, you know, we'll do the big cases because everybody loves, you know, the main cases they already know about. Billy and Alexis, especially, they work in the world and they know that it's like so biased.
Right.
And it's like, of course, the pretty white girl is always going to be shown like all over the media because that's the salacious story. Right. So we really try to like champion for those like lesser told stories.
Right.
There is this example. The first degree connection was this girl that was in high school. And when she was in high school, two murders happened. One murder was this girl. I don't remember. It was a girl named Sarah. She murdered her parents. Sarah was white. Her family was all white. Okay. They're like upper class, whatever.
Okay.
Murdered her parents. The story, I mean, the whole school was all talking about it. They offered counseling to like all the kids. Okay. They had like a vigil. It was the whole thing. And then there was this girl, I think her name was Maggie. She was Hispanic and she was murdered by, I can't remember if it was her ex-boyfriend or exactly what the story was. We did this a long time ago.
Okay.
But when she was murdered, no counseling, nobody talked about it, no resources, nobody cared. And it was just such a stark contrast between the two. So it was like, number one, one girl that murdered her family, she wasn't the one murdered,
right,
but they're still offering all this counseling, which, you know, rightfully you should be offering counseling. But when your classmate was murdered, she was sitting right next to you in school. And then you pretended like it didn't happen. Like it was obviously like fucking racist. Right. So we were really trying to highlight those two stories next to each other to show the difference of something that happened between like 3 years.
Wow.
But yeah, I mean, it's not fair.
Right.
And like I said, with all these things, it's like that doesn't make that person's life any less worthy than this other person because of the color of their skin. And they deserve to have their stories told as well and respected and valued, you know?
Right. I mean, we see that a ton right now with like trans women, black trans women who are murdered.
Yeah.
And like nobody
talks about.
Or sex
workers.
Yeah. And sex workers. Yeah. I mean, those are like the two huge categories of like people that are murdered and nobody talks about.
Yeah. Oh, it's like
all
the lesser dead. That's how they're like referred to. And
I've never heard that. That's terrible.
Yeah. Or like drug addicts,
sure,
sex workers, sure, people of color.
People who like had it coming.
Yeah.
Right. Like that there's this some feeling that unless you're like a perfect innocent victim, you're not worthy of any sympathy.
Yeah.
That's what we heard so much when there was like a lot of those police shootings that were getting publicized. It was like, he was no angel. She was no angel. It's like, okay, but they also like didn't do anything that deserved for them to be shot dead in the street. Like,
right.
It's just such a weird way in which we justify or don't justify caring about someone else's life.
Yeah. I mean, you see that, I mean, everywhere.
Yeah.
And even with, you know, certain serial killers, like you won't really hear about as much because all their victims were African-American sex workers.
Right. Well, there's the guy in L.A. right now, the guy who was killing young black gay men, like overdosing them on drugs in his apartment in West Hollywood. I never heard about it.
Oh, yeah.
And then Becca told me about it. Becca's really like my true crime like pusher, I guess. I don't know. But she was like, you didn't hear about this? And then I was like looking into it. But that's like such a crazy thing. Living in LA, you'd think people would be talking about it.
Yeah.
I mean, not just living in LA. It was happening in West Hollywood and I live 5 minutes from West Hollywood.
That's crazy. See, I haven't really even heard of that.
I barely have heard about it, but it's like,
and we live in a liberal city.
Yeah.
Like imagine, you know, in more conservative areas.
Right.
I mean,
Right.
Don't care.
I was trying to think of like what are famous or infamous true crime stories where the victim isn't a white girl. And I mean, Haman Lee in the
right.
in the serial one is one. But like
I can't.
Sometimes it's like parents, like the Menendez family. Like that was like father and mother.
Yeah.
But white.
Yeah.
There's not a ton. I mean, I'm sure I'm skipping over some that are like obvious.
Like you're thinking like if there is like a person of color victim.
Yeah.
In like a big case.
Right. Like there's no, you know, Hispanic JonBenet.
Right.
You know,
and I can't think of a single one.
I can't think of one. There have been moments like where there are people that were on the news for like a day and they like tried to make a thing. But yeah. Like, I really can't think of any that were really big besides Haman Lee. She's right. The only one that I'm like, I know. I feel like I feel really.
And it's not like that. Like when that happened, it was a big case. You know what I mean? It's right. Only big because of serial.
Exactly. And like I can think of people who were killed by the police. And I don't mean those kind of shootings.
No, I know
like,
what you mean.
I mean like those like true crime.
You mean stories. The ones yeah, that have been like sensationalized
right.
almost.
Right.
And exactly. like to like a true crime staple.
Right.
Which
exactly.
is fucked up.
Like the Lacey Petersons. Like,
right.
It's all white girls.
Yep.
Which is just so crazy. I wonder why. I mean, I know why, but I'm also, I'm curious why we think that we can't relate to other victims.
I mean, and that's what's so fucked up about it because we're all people,
right.
You know, and it hurts just as bad losing a loved one, no matter what your race or
right.
your, you know, sexual orientation
right.
or whatever. It's,
right.
you know, it hurts just as bad. And we're all at the end of the day, the same. So,
right.
but that's like what I was saying before. It's like, we're trying to tell those stories. Cause you know, the good thing about having a podcast is you can do whatever the fuck you want
exactly.
and talk about whatever the hell you want.
Bingo.
So, for us, I mean, our stories are crowdsourced, right? So it's like, we're writing about stories that people want to tell. So we feel fortunate that we can tell the stories of some of these people that were otherwise forgotten because nobody else is. Because these, you know, a lot of the times if you're picking what you're talking about, maybe you're not going to do that story because
right.
it's not as exciting to your listeners.
Right.
But
I think that's true for like, I mean, that's how I feel about this podcast too. Like sometimes I'm like, oh, I need to pick a book that's popular.
Right.
Instead of picking a book by a queer author or something.
Right.
You know? Like it's like, how do I balance picking something that I know like people are going to want to read and listen
to. And want
to
be engaged
versus
in.
Me being like, I know this is a good book and no one's heard of it and I want to do it anyway. Like,
yeah.
It's like that balance is really hard.
Yeah. But you need that because people like you and like, hopefully what, you know, we're doing on our end, it's like, that's going to push the needle
right.
movement, the needle that way.
It's our responsibility if we're going to host a podcast
right.
to talk about things, but it does get tricky because all of a sudden you start worrying about things that don't matter as much.
Totally.
Right. It's like when I first started the podcast, I was like, I'm only going to do books that I want to do. And now I'm like, okay, well, it's fine. It's just one book. Like, whatever.
And you're like, all right, well, I guess every book I'm doing, I don't actually want to read.
It's true. I mean, and I try to have conversations that I want to have around the books, even
right.
if I didn't necessarily like love the book or whatever. But it's true that like my going into it, I was like, I'm only going to do books that I want to read that are like about the things I want to talk about. And then it's like, I have a guest and they're like, I don't want to read any of those things. I'm like, okay, well, what do you want to do? Whatever.
Right.
It's fine. It's fine. It's fine.
No, there is a balance though. Cause it's like, obviously the point of a podcast is to have people engage
be
and
entertained.
Listen to it.
Yeah.
But if you're like, I'm going to read the most obscure book
right.
that I have ever
right.
like heard about. And people
right.
are like, no.
We're like, we're not going to read and we're not going to listen.
Yeah.
Okay. The last thing we always talk about for every book is title and cover.
Okay.
So again, the title is Chase Darkness With Me, How One True Crime Writer Started Solving Murders. And the cover is kind of like, I don't know, murky. And there's like a tree and a
rose. It's like turquoisey and then yellow.
Google it, people.
Google it.
What do you think of the title and the cover?
Not my favorite.
Cover or title or both?
Both.
Fair.
Sorry, Billy. I mean, I guess I get that it's a true crime book, right? So it's
right.
like it has like the same like true crime vibe.
Right.
I'm a very aesthetics driven person.
Okay.
I would have done it. Like the yellow is not my color.
Well, that's like the crime tape, right?
Yeah. It's like the caution tape.
The caution tape.
I understand like the angle that they're going for. But again, it's just not, I like more of like a, I don't know, more of an aesthetic,
yeah.
like a design.
It didn't, the cover for me doesn't like grab you. And I feel like it needed a grabbier either title or cover. So nothing is grabby.
I was thinking about the title yesterday. This is so funny that you bring that up, because Chase Darkness with me, it seems passive. Mm-hmm. And if I, like, I'm like, okay, you're I'd say, like, Chasing Darkness.
Right.
Like, that would be my title.
Right.
But it's like, maybe there already is a Chasing Darkness. You never know. But
sure.
I think the...
Well, the darkness, I feel like, is to connect it to the Michelle McNamara book, right?
Oh.
Don't you think?
I guess so.
I can't... Now I can't think of the title again.
I'll be gone in the dark.
I'll be gone in the dark. I just assume that they tried to use the word dark or darkness to connect it to I'll Be Gone in the Dark.
Okay, that makes sense. And then I know, like, Chase Darkness with me, it's like he has, like, these call to actions, right? So it's like he wants people to join in to what he's doing. But in my, if I think that there might have been a way to been like...
Yeah, I agree. It is passive. More of a, it's totally true.
More I've never of a flash.
Put it that way, but it's totally true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's kind of just like meh. To me, like, it's not bad. It's not offensive. Like, there are covers that make me want to die, and there's titles where I'm like, who approved this?
I know.
But it just doesn't necessarily, I think, again, like, from where we started, where I started, it doesn't necessarily say what the book is.
Right.
And I feel like it, so I was confused the whole time, because I was like, what am I reading?
Yeah.
And I just think,
like, when am I going to chase the darkness?
Yeah. And like, I don't know, like, how one true crime writer started solving murders. I thought maybe, like, we were going to, like, I don't know. I thought maybe it was going to, I had no idea.
Right.
And I just think that the packaging could have helped it more.
Yeah.
I said that was going to be the last thing, but we do have to just quickly talk about his relationship to I'll Be Gone in the Dark.
Oh, it's
that's
crazy.
Like a huge part of the book is like he was friends with Michelle McNamara and they were like check in about true crime stuff together.
Yeah. So they're like true crime buds. And while they're both working on their like separate projects, anytime something exciting would happen, they'd text each other, call each other. They'd meet up for coffee. It's funny because when I met Billy, she had already passed away.
Okay.
So I never understood their relationship really. And it's like, he'd talk about her, but I didn't know how they met. I didn't know how involved they were. I was like, oh, it's like, I guess they were like kind of acquaintance friends, but they were super close. And, you know, he was a huge part of finishing that book. And that's, you know, doing her like such a, like a wonderful thing at the end of the day. Cause that's what she was devoting her life
to. Like, it was a nice way to be able to honor
absolutely
his friend, like, that he was able to, like, that he was a writer, that it worked out that he was able to be the person to do that. And I thought that stuff was really good. That was probably my favorite stuff in the book.
Right.
Cause I was curious, like, how did this guy end up being the guy?
I didn't know that either.
Why did it go to her? Why did her book go to this
guy? Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, this makes so much sense.
Yeah. And it's, I haven't read the book yet, but you know, that's a hard story to tell when they didn't know who the guy was. They're still trying to connect things together. There was no ending. So it's like, how do you actually finish a book like that? So that's a big undertaking. And obviously he was doing it like outside of his normal job and stuff.
Yeah.
So it was a really interesting, it's interesting to learn about like one of your friends like that.
Yeah. I feel like that's very cool. It's like, oh, surprise, like secret life that you have that I never have talked to you about like in depth.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else that you want to say about the book before we...
The only thing is I get a shout out in the bag.
Oh yeah. Jackson, the acknowledgements. You know, that's on my life bucket list, is to be an acknowledgement of a book.
Really?
Yeah. It's like like that, and to officiate a wedding and to meet Barack Obama. Those are like my three big ones.
Wow. That's a great bucket list.
I think that's pretty good.
I need to start making one. Well, maybe you'll be in ours.
Okay. Oh my God. Dreams.
I think it might happen.
Stay tuned, everyone. Read the book about me by the Lady Gang. Starring me. I'm going to literally, if that happens, I'm going to be like, everyone, come turn to page 345. Check out line 17. I am in this book.
My book.
My book about me and my life. People are so thankful for me. No, but I did notice that you got your shout out. It was very nice. I actually always read the acknowledgments. I love reading acknowledgments.
They're so, you know what? I didn't even know until the book came out. He's like, well, no, the audiobook came out. And he's like, oh, I gave you guys a shout out, but you won't know what it is.
Yeah.
Because they don't do it,
and it's rude.
Yeah, and then so when we finally got the book, we read it, and I was like, "That's so." I was like, "You did not need to do
they
that."
It was a nice shout out.
Yeah,
too.
It was so sweet.
It was good.
Yeah,
you'll have to turn to the back of the book, people.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Jack, thank you so much for being here. This was awesome. You guys can find Jack on First Degree Podcast, and you can find her on The Lady Gang, both on Podcast One, where you can find this show. Obviously, if you're listening, you found us. So you did it. And yeah, thank you, Jack.
Thank you for having me.
Yay. And we will see you guys in the stacks.
Thank you all so much for listening today. And thank you to Jack for being our guest. Find everything we discussed on today's show by clicking the link in the show notes. For more from The Stacks, follow us on social media at The Stacks Pod on Instagram and at The Stacks Pod _ on Twitter. And check out the website, thestackspodcast.com. Remember, get your book recommendations read on air by sending us an email at askingthestacks@gmail.com. To join the Stacks Pack and get inside access to this show, go to patreon.com/thestacks. Thanks to Audible, listeners of this podcast get a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook download. So go to audibletrial.com/thestacks. And make sure you're subscribed to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite, and our theme music is from Tagirages. This show was created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas.